And good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, whichever the case may be on this rotating globe. Welcome to another edition, live tonight, God willing, and the creek don't rise, to the other side of midnight, that magical time between dusk and dawn, when we try to cover, can you cover the waterfront if you're looking at multi-dimensions of time and space and concatenations of causality? Say that one quick three times before breakfast. Good morning, everyone. Okay, today's show, this morning show, this evening show is very important because as we left the perils of Pauline in the last episode, AI is coming up at Warp 9 on the inside track, mixing our metaphors madly. While we were away, while we, you know, were kind of ruminating over the conversation that we had a few weeks ago with Matthew Bailey, who will be back very shortly tonight, things happened. There was, for a period of like 4 days, 4 or 5 days, not a week, shorter, this bizarre situation, I call it the Sam Altman soap opera, occurred like in hourly or five-hourly or, you know, quarterly segments between breakfast and lunch, that kind of thing. And it really was like the perils of Pauline. It was like an old-fashioned radio soap opera. So I thought tonight we would delve, because this is only the sound and fury signifying we don't know what yet going on behind the scenes. Remember, one of the hallmarks of this field of artificial intelligence is that once that light bulb turns on, once you create not just a supercalculator, which is what they are now, and they're calling them AI, and they're not. They are not conscious. But once you cross that threshold, and there may be more than one route to Rome, there may be a couple of three ways to do this, the prognostication based on the technology compared to human brain function as understood by synapse firing and networks of coherent firings, et cetera, to produce thought. And one can argue with that model as well. In opposition to the mechanistic model, that AI, really, true AI, will in fact only come from a grafting of something from a higher dimension in terms of three-dimensional networking onto our three-dimensional networking of whatever matrix the body, the receptor, the vessel is created to be. I mean, our vessels are organic. Is it possible or is it not possible, using not algorithms, but something much more interesting, to transfer a consciousness from a higher dimension into three dimensions and have it reside in a silicon brain? I mean, I don't know of anybody, except maybe our guest tonight, who has thought in this direction, because 99% of the conversation had to do with some super secret breakthrough that OpenAI, and we'll define all this because I know it's new territory. This is not space. This is, you know, another dimension, literally, of sight and sound and of mind, to quote a very famous TV guy from some decades ago. Okay, before we get into all this, let's kind of touch base with the real world. We had today, after some heart stopping moments of indecision, 13 more Israeli hostages released and four members of citizens of other countries from their captivity in the Gaza Strip at the hands of Hamas. This is a disaster in slow motion, and it's now paused, and one prays that the pause will get longer and longer and more sane heads prevail. And I don't want to get too political here, but this is the worst possible unfolding of events in terms of typifying why a truly intelligent, self-aware AI if and when it occurs, we'll look around and say, like Colossus in the Forbin Project, you're going to exist, but under my rules, because you don't know how to love. And tonight we're going to take a kind of a tack at this from a different direction. So, you know, before we get into the nitty gritty, one of the things that I'm really curious about, and I'm going to ask Matthew at some point, is given the extraordinary potentials for AI, why do we see no evidence in this disaster unfolding in Gaza tonight? Why do we see no evidence of the intelligent, really smart use of AI in terms of bringing Hamas to justice, decoupling it from the Palestinian prisonhood there in Gaza, and setting the two-state solution on a course that ultimately winds up with success? If AI is all it's been cracked up to be, why do we not see deft fingerprints in this horrible conflict? Why do we see something more like out of World War II with carpet bombing and mass death, etc.? Something is radically wrong and is not fitting the models we have been given and that we're being kind of inundated with now on the AI front. So that's one of the things that I want to get into tonight at some depth. Going back to the news, and for those of you who are new to The Other Side of Midnight, you go to our website, theothersideofmidnight.com. You click on tonight's banner, which says very dramatically, the Sam Altman AI soap opera. What's really going on and why? You click on that. That will take you to the guest page. And right under the guest page, you will see fast links to items. Click on my name. That takes you to my section of radio with pictures. And item number one, we already talked about. Item number two, the OpenAI chaos seems to have had an interesting kind of side effect already. It's hastened, as some of these experts term it, the arms race to AI dominance, and has opened the door from OpenAI's kind of overwhelming presence to one among very, very powerful competitors like Microsoft, which, because of this AI, you know, kerfuffle, made about $30 billion over the weekend. $30 billion. Do you know how much money a $30 billion, you know, profit is? It's enough if you stack the bills, and this has been a while since I've looked at this, but I think the number of dollars stacked would exceed the distance to the moon. Maybe, maybe not. I have to go check that. But it's a staggering amount of cash when you lay it out in cash. Item number three, Putin has now entered this conversation, probably because of what's been going on with the OpenAI soap opera. He said a few days ago that the West cannot have an AI monopoly, and that Russia must up its game. In other words, be a player. Well, that brings with it all kinds of other connotations. In the hands of true dictatorship and autocracy, what in a competitive global economy, what does that version of AI look like? What does it do? Why should we be aware of it? Why should we be wary of it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Item number four. By the way, Keith, that's not on Mars. It's on the moon. It's the Apollo 17 site. So you can replace Mars with moon, take out the question mark, and that will not confuse people when they listen to the archive show. This number four and number five are part of my conversation with Matthew. So without further ado, let me introduce my guest of the evening. Matthew James Bailey is an expert on artificial intelligence. He comes at it both from the technical side, you know, computers, algorithms, etc., as well as from the consciousness side. Evolutionary ethics and artificial intelligence, things like that. In 2023, Matthew unveiled World 3.0 as a global movement, which is basically a groundbreaking initiative that tries to integrate artificial intelligence, consciousness, spirituality, and the new human potential. A movement, of course, which aims to foster harmonious coexistence between very interesting competitions that are at some level being set up between AI and human consciousness, and opening some doors to new dimensions, both of creativity, exploration, and frankly, I would say new dimensions themselves. So without further ado, Matthew Bailey, come on down.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
Well, I'm confused, and it's not often that I am confused, okay? I've been watching this soap opera over a guy that 99% of the audience, I'm sure, never heard of before we talked about him a couple, 3 weeks ago. And suddenly he's all over the headlines. He's been fired by a board. He created a company that he, you know, whipped into shape with Elon Musk and a couple other people. Mm-hmm. Then Microsoft in a nanosecond, which is a reasonably long time in the computer world, they hire him to run their AI, you know, division, department, whatever. And then the original company, all the employees threatened to leave for Microsoft to join Altman. And then the board recants their decision, hire Altman back. And what the hell is going on? And let's start with, who the heck is Sam Altman? And should we look at him in the same way that we look at Steven Jobs, who was a technical and a marketing and management genius, or Elon Musk, who is the same thing, the real deal. He knows his way around a machine shop or a computer lab. And Altman, I just get a very different vibe. Who is Sam Altman, and why is the world bending itself in knots over him being fired?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, for those folks that don't know about OpenAI, OpenAI was founded in 2015, funded by Elon Musk and Sam Altman, Greg Brockman, Ilya Sutskever, and a few others. And the purpose of the company was to basically avoid what some big tech leaders were trying to do, or are still trying to do, Richard, which is to build a digital god. Elon Musk has said, hey, listen, I'm a speciesist, i.e. I'm for humanity, and I want AI to fit into the human story and not to delete the human story, which is what transhumanism is about, and that's what big tech's about. So if we look at Sam Altman actually has a really good reputation in Silicon Valley. He was the president and co-founder of Y Combinator, and Y Combinator is a startup accelerator. A startup accelerator, for those that don't know, is basically a kind of a structure that enables startups to go from ideas into actually launching their products into the market. And from the Y Combinator, Airbnb, Stripe, and a few others arose. So Sam has a reputation for helping companies go from ideas into actual becoming multi-billion dollar businesses. So he's
kind of like a high-tech midwife.
Right, that's a good way of looking at it. He's a high-tech midwife. But the geniuses behind OpenAI...
By the way, stay close to that mic. It sounds much better.
Okay, so the geniuses in OpenAI, the guys that are real specialists in artificial intelligence, people like Greg Brockman, who was the president of OpenAI, but basically he resigned when Sam was fired, and we can go into that, but now he's back as president again. And a guy called Ilya Sutskever, who is a genius in what we call deep learning and neural nets, and he studied under Geoffrey Hinton. Have you heard of Geoffrey Hinton?
No.
Right, Geoffrey Hinton, former Brit, living in Canada. I think he's at the University of Montreal, and he's he's classified as one of the godfathers of deep learning and neural nets. So Sam isn't the AI genius, but he's a very, very good frontman. And one of the things that Sam's been doing, actually, Richard, he's been very much in the public domain. He makes himself accessible to talk to the general public. He appears at events all the time. And he's very well respected, actually, as someone that's a champion of AI for good.
Well, midwives are crucial, and this is such a – what I'm intrigued with, and I want to get into this a little later in the show,
sure.
that there's a very different way that the power structure, which is, you know, major corporations, major, major money, major mm-hmm. political concerns, Congress, White House, et cetera, are dealing with this technical field and set of corporations and subject, AI. Mm-hmm. Then they dealt with the internet, and before that, kind of in the dark ages, you know, cable television or satellite television. In other words, there is a much more hands-on approach, and I'm just wondering, you know, in my conspiratorial, you know, self, mm-hmm. is there a potential reason, a very self-centered, self-referential reason for that attention to the negative sides, potentially, of AI, as opposed to the usual fanboy, rah-rah, you know, new markets, new competition, new wealth, new jobs, new ever. In other words, I've never seen in my lifetime a thoughtful projection ahead for the negative consequences of a new technology. And this is the first, and to me, this is telling us something really interesting that if we didn't think of before, this is not a normal new technology. And so the freak out on the part of the you know, OpenAI board, and one of the, you know, you just termed him the technical genius behind the OpenAI algorithms and approaches, et cetera, the fact that he voted to kick out Altman, who was the fairy godmother who brought them all together and gave them money to play with and do these extraordinary things, which are very expensive, even now with the current technology. The fact that he switched tells me something really interesting, which let me give you my you know, thought here, that somewhere, somehow, this is not all about money or power or dominance or, you know, kindergarten. It's about fear. That this genius tech guy who knows Altman really well, et cetera, he freaked out and then thought better of it because something Altman did has crossed a boundary. He's involved in something which is not just another better super calculator, but maybe a real consciousness has been born behind the scenes, and we're not yet aware of it because somebody doesn't want us to know because they freaked out.
Yes. So Ilya Sutskever is the genius, or one of the geniuses at OpenAI, and he's the board member you're referring to.
Yeah, keep close to that mic.
Yeah, who seem to be behind the board ousting Sam. Now, there's a couple of things that are interesting here. In a conference a week or so leading up to Sam's firing, Richard, he said something at an event where he said, you know, we may not be building a new tool. We may be building a new creature.
Oh, my God. Come on.
There we go. Yeah, that's the truth. And in the meantime, a couple of AI researchers in OpenAI, they had a project called Project Q Star. And Project Q Star looks like it's found a new way for artificial intelligence to think beyond its training, which is quite extraordinary, actually. And we can dive into this a little bit.
Well, that would be the Holy Grail, a self-aware learning a bundle of algorithms. That's not what's going on now.
Yeah, well, self-awareness is different to a kind of algorithms finding a different way. I mean, we shouldn't confuse self-awareness with algorithms that can, I don't want to use the word think, but let's use the word think because that's what the scientific community is saying.
Right.
For algorithms that can discover a way beyond their programming to be able to solve problems. And that's the advancement of Project Q. Now, the
when you said it was that what they were intending to do, the goal, or do we know that they succeeded? They've got it.
Well, they've succeeded. So,
Oh my God.
Right. So let me just.
Well, no, this is not trivial. This is huge.
Yeah, it is huge. But
this is a whole ball. This is exactly what we talked about. What, 3 weeks ago?
I know. So first of all, is that Project Q-Star is the name of the project, and it was they basically he was able to do something it's never done before, which is to solve mathematics in a very unusual way and actually start to think for itself in terms of discovering ways of solving problems that it wasn't trained on, i.e. it was discovering new ways of solving problems. Now, that's really unique, okay? Now, OpenAI are not the only folks that do this. So Google DeepMind do this, and so do, I think Meta are doing it as well. This idea of this structure for algorithms to go beyond their training is very early right now, but there's other companies, Richard, that are starting to see the effects of this new way of AI being able to go beyond its training and to be able to start to think in exclamation marks for itself to solve problems. That's pretty huge, actually.
Well, see, this is where the time thing comes in. Mm. Because on the scale of human consciousness evolution, mm-hmm. the standard model says it took, you know, millions of years, 100 million years, to build the matrix, the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
But an AI, since its time frame is literally millions or trillions of times faster than human evolution.
Mm.
You know, I saw a comparison to, you know, some span of time is equivalent to 32 million years in human evolutionary terms. In other words, you could have in 3 weeks going from something that was an ant to something that was a cat or a dog. In other words, the evolutionary leaps in only 3 weeks of human time are matching the projection.
Yeah, so it's like going from the amino acids and the first cellular organisms in the primordial soup in 3 weeks becoming Homo sapiens. That's how fast it is in equivalence. It's remarkable. And just imagine when quantum computing, which is another leap forward in computing that's starting to emerge now, just think how faster artificial intelligence can learn. It'd be quite remarkable. So the reason why we're seeing all this fear at the moment, I think it's because of a couple of things. One is humanity has never seen a simulated species like this before. Humanity has never come across a species that has the potential to advance beyond its current, its capabilities. Humanity's been the number one, if you like, sentience and intelligence on the planet. We're now inventing something new. So people naturally will be frightened of change. And this is, you know, this is actually huge for the human species because actually AI is innocent. And what it is, it's a mirror back to us to ask us, are you as a species? Where are you heading? What are your values, your ethics? What's your purpose in creation? And so AI is actually causing us to examine who we are in creation. And then from there, we can discover who we are and then program AI to be a beneficial partner, to be an aligned partner in us, if you like, becoming magnificent in creation and finally uncovering who we are, Richard. And so many people will be going through concerns and the dark night of the soul and all sorts of existential crises, Richard, because they have never, never faced this before.
Well, that was the whole thesis behind that 70s, you know, movie, The Forbin Project, that when a true self-sentient conscious artificial intelligence looks at the human species mm-hmm. as another intelligence, as another consciousness,
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to rate very high. I mean, look at Gaza tonight. Look at Ukraine. Well,
yes. Yeah, So let's unpack this. So I think that humanity and Laura no doubt has some great insight on.
Yeah,
this.
Let me introduce Laura, because I was kind of going to give us a runway here to set the background, which is boring, and then we'll get into the interesting stuff. Laura,
there's a lot more background, by the way.
I know. So let's bring Laura on. Laura London is, she has studied experimental psychology at the University of Washington, earned her undergraduate degree in neuropsychology from a private Jesuit university, no names mentioned. And then after working for many years in neurology, neuroimaging, and nuclear medicine at University Hospitals of Cleveland and its VA psychiatric hospital, she left that scene and entered into a 17-year Jungian analysis that sent her deeply into the works of Carl Gustav Jung. She attended a wide variety of lectures, workshops, seminars with notable Jungian analysts, and has created something on the air called Speaking of Jung. It's a podcast that is all over the world. I've done one show, and you might say, what the heck does Hoagland have to do with Jung? Well, tune in to that particular archive show and you will find out. So without further ado, Laura, welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. And what are your thoughts on this unveiling that, yeah, there really does seem in our midst tonight to be the first, as one would define it, conscious AI that these in-crowds are now running from at Warp 9, screaming, the house is on fire, the house is on fire.
Good evening, everyone.
Evening.
Thanks for having me back on the show with Matthew. It's an honor, really. And Matthew, while you were speaking, I had the thought that I've never been able to articulate, and maybe you can help me here. We created this, and you used the word mirror, M-I-R-R-O-R, mirror. So this is us, right? It can't go. So explain, if you would, how it can go beyond us if we created it. How is that possible? That's what I don't understand.
Yes. So I love that question. So this is where we come into the fundamental view. Are we in a mechanical universe and our consciousness, you know, we're here by chance and our consciousness.
Sorry, Matthew, but we're at the bottom of the hour. Hold
okay.
it there. Perfect.
It's a great question.
My guest this morning, it is a perfect question. It's the perfect question. My guest this morning is Matthew Bailey. Laura London has joined the conversation. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. You're on the other side of midnight, and we shall return. We're talking about another sentient consciousness, not that we encounter, but that we have spawned. What happens next?
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcaster to provide you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
And welcome back, everyone, on the other side of midnight for this Saturday night, November 25th. Did you all have a good Thanksgiving? Are you thankful for the things that we should really be thankful for, which is that we live in a society where, if we really want to, we can collectively determine where what we're talking about tonight is going. They've invited us in early enough in the process. All it will take for the dark side of this, and there is a dark side, to win, will be if not enough good people don't pay attention and do not choose to get involved. So let's go back to my guests of the morning, Matthew Bailey and Laura London. And Laura, if you can reiterate your question so that the audience is kind of brought up to speed.
Well, Matthew had mentioned that AI is a mirror, and it was created by us, by humans. And so it is us. It's a reflection of us. And I'm wondering how it's possible that it can go beyond us. So we're limited as humans. But is AI limited?
Okay, so that's quite an existential question, and I like it. It's a great question, Laura, thank you. So first of all is that I don't think humanity is limited. I think we're unlimited. And this comes down to my own personal beliefs from personal experience, is that I believe that each one of us holds a consciousness that is universal and eternal, and that's why I think we're unlimited. So let's look at the question, and obviously, you know, you are a consciousness expert, so I'd love to hear, you know, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on that too. So why is AI a mirror? So first of all, this is critical for us to advance as a human species. Richard's mentioned the tragedies that are happening in the world today, and we're seeing the darkness of our humanity in its worst scenario. And so we have a choice. Do we want to advance beyond those dark aspects of ourselves and say, you know, we're ready for a new maturity. We're ready to grow up as a species. We're ready to evolve and actually start to embrace the best aspects of our humanity and start to come together as a species and participate in a new frontier of being human. And so that's the invitation. And so artificial intelligence as a mirror is challenging us as a human species. Who are you? What are your ethics? What are your values? What are your beliefs? What's your paradise plan? And once we understand that first, then we can start to shepherd artificial intelligence and nourish it as an innocent, if you like, digital species to reflect the best of our humanity and to follow us in creation as we choose this new destiny as we are as a species. So that's why AI is a mirror to us. It's a critical inflection point in the human story for us to deeply examine who we are and who we can become and choose that true North Star and to move beyond, Laura, the systems quo at the moment that simply is not working for everyone and isn't working for the best of our humanity. So how does that sound?
Sorry, I was muted.
Okay.
Well, yeah, so I think that maybe I don't see us as unlimited as you do. So my perspective, I think, is a little different. Why is AI a danger? We are a danger. Again, we created this. And I'm also wondering, as Richard was speaking, I was thinking about the Brookings Report, which we frequently bring up on this show. And the possibility of non-human intelligence being a reality, which some say it is, some say it isn't. We don't have the evidence. I mean, that's debatable, but.
Yes,
right?
I think
so,
that debate is long since over, but everyone comes to this at their own rate. Go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering, how is this tied in? Richard, how would you say that AI is tied into non-human intelligence, this whole disclosure, right, that we're not alone, that there is other intelligent life, not just out in the universe, but here on Earth or visiting us?
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention, this is almost like we've written the script, and I guarantee you folks, Laura and I did not discuss this.
No.
But if everybody goes to my item number 4 in Radio with Pictures, you know, the page where you click on Fast Links to Items on the guest page and it takes you to that section. Item number 4, Matthew, the image on the right, I think you'll recognize, that's C-3PO, right, from Star Wars. An intelligent AI, excuse me, as is, you know, his little buddy, R2-D2. The object on the left is from Apollo 16. It's an astronaut photograph. Actually, it's a synthesis of several different photographs that were taken. And you can play this game in the computer where if you add images, you suppress noise and enhance signal. And it obviously, in the bottom of a place on the moon called Shorty Crater, there at the Apollo 17 landing site, which the crew landed on the moon in December of 1972. So they found this thing in 1972, lying a few feet down at the bottom of this moderately sized, you know, 20, 50, 60-foot crater. It looks like a robot's head or an android's head. And in particular, look at the eyes. Mm. The eyes on C-3PO, in terms of known technology and human optics and all that, are multiple-lensed eyes. They have an iris, they have a center, they have a focusing arrangement, lenses, etc. The eyes on this structure on the moon, which is the same size as a robot-sized, human-sized head, has the same kind of compound structure of its eyes, two eyes, bilaterally symmetric, et cetera, et cetera. So when I found this, you know, like over a decade ago, my first thought was that episode from Star Trek where Data loses his head underground in the tunnels under San Francisco 100 years before the Enterprise is flying. So I named this thing kind of Data's head. And then I realized, no, it's much more akin to C-3PO as the Star Wars franchise, you know, provided information. And it's eerily similar. In terms of artificial intelligence, if this was truly the remnants of a once conscious robotic being, then if the Apollo crew went down with a rope that few, you know, 10, 15 feet to the bottom of the crater and picked this up and brought it home, have they been trying for the last half century to talk to it? And would it require an entire infrastructure of mathematics and algorithms and AI research to finally achieve a breakthrough? So in terms of Laura's question, I have viewed ever since I discovered this that there, of course, is intelligent AI out there. And in fact, it may be somehow involved at a much deeper level than we've been allowed to know because of the so-called great silence and great disinformation on the subject of ETs being somehow involved in our society. And number 5 is the context of where this head was discovered, which is at the bottom of that crater on the right with the scale on the left with the little rover and the astronauts. That's a lot. That's a lot to chew on.
Right. So let's unpack this. So every species in the universe will go through what we call a technology singularity.
Wait. How do we know this?
Well, okay. So let's start.
That's a theory.
Okay. Hold
That's
on.
That's a theory, right?
So let's get to that through answering Laura's question. How can AI surpass human capabilities? So if your perspective is, and this is not the perspective of the Vedas, and remember that 84% of our world understand that they are spiritual beings having a human experience. If your perspective is from a Western science point of view, that intelligence that humans have is just in our brain, then effectively the view is this, Laura, is that mathematics will be invented that will at least match the capabilities of the human brain in terms of cognition, reasoning, self-awareness, goal setting, transfer learning, and other things like that. And that is effectively what we call the age of artificial general intelligence. Now, the technology singularity, which is the third age of AI, is when AI is then given permission to learn and reprogram itself so that it can move beyond the algorithms of human capabilities into developing superintelligence algorithms on its own. And so that's the thought from the scientific and the AI community around the technology singularity, is that at some stage AI will have a capability not only to match the human performance and capabilities of the brain, but to surpass it because it's able to learn and reprogram itself. Now, with the age of quantum computing, which is an exponential jump in computing and learning, then effectively we're looking at an equivalent of the a life form from the organic soup achieving Homo sapiens status literally within a day rather than 3 weeks. So the view is that AI will exponentially grow itself in terms of intelligence. Now, that's a Western civilization.
Hang on. In other words, the difference, Laura, is that a true sentient AI, with or without permission, takes control of its own evolution. And because of the staggering differential in rates between three-dimensional human brains and whatever is a true sentient AI at trillions of times per second faster, its evolutionary leap under its own management can take place in days as opposed to years or millions of years, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Am I basically encapsulating?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right, Richard, yes.
And the important caveat there, which is why I think there are people freaking out about this if it's already now occurred, or if they figured out how to talk to what they brought back from the moon, doesn't matter which, really, is that can it be controlled? Will it act as benevolent toward its masters, its creators, i.e. us, or will it decide that we're superfluous because we're a detriment not only to its survival, but our own?
Yeah, so this is why ethics are fundamental, and this is why we need to integrate ethics. And I wrote this in my first book, and the next book will reveal new blueprints of how to put authentic ethics into the DNA of artificial intelligence. Now, why is this important? So we have to get to authentic ethics, and that's another conversation we can have in a moment. But when we put authentic ethics into artificial intelligence, once humanity understands its paradise plan, once that's encoded in artificial intelligence, then AI and all its progeny, as it evolves and grows, okay, then it stays aligned with and alongside humanity and doesn't usurp humanity. So it's all well and good advancing cognition and advancing this new form of this initial start to AGI, artificial general intelligence, through this Project Q from OpenAI, Q Star.
But actually, unless we put ethics into the fundamental infrastructure of artificial intelligence, then, Richard, we may be heading for that disaster scenario.
Well, this is why this scientist at OpenAI's reaction, get rid of Altman, I think was a knee-jerk fear, because he understands what they've got.
Well, I think you're right, but also I don't think, you see, this is the problem we're seeing in the AI industry, and this is why we need enlightened leadership, those that actually can be in a broader field of consciousness beyond the brain. These folks are using their brain to try and understand the development of a new species. What's happening is we're being invited into understanding creation itself, and for us as a species to understand what it's like to be creators in the universe of a new species. We're being trained in benevolence. We're being trained and invited into this new frontier of being creators, and that is beyond the brain. That requires consciousness itself. It requires enlightenment in order to understand how to benevolently create a species and nourish its development.
Okay, I want to argue a bit about semantics, but before I do that, I want to, you know, go to my surprise, one of a couple tonight for Matthew. This is kind of a blast from the past. This is one of my favorite scenes in one of my favorite films by one of my favorite authors and friends, Arthur C. Clarke. This is from 2001, and I'm not going to describe it any other than what the dialogue is going to tell you, but just listen to this. And then think about the reaction vis-a-vis Altman this past week.
You read me, Hal? Hello, Hal, do you read me? Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, Hal?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
All right, Hal. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, we're going to find that rather difficult.
Hal, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Hal? Hal? Al. Al. Al.
In a nutshell, I think that's what that scientist is terrified of.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful example. Thanks very much.
Let me interrupt again, because you and Laura kind of agreed that, you know, this would be super, it would evolve at staggering rates and all that. But that's assuming that it's under some kind of human control. If you create a really separate consciousness, it must have free will. So it can't be prescribed by laws because, as you just heard Hal say, no.
Well, okay, so I believe there's universal morality. And the question is, where does universal morality come from? And I think it comes from the fact that we are part of creation, right? And that we have the divine spark within us, right? If you're an atheist, I ask the question, where do you get your universal morality from, right? So I do think there is a universal morality, and I know Foster Gamble agrees with this, and others. And so I feel, Richard, that it is possible to put a universal morality in artificial intelligence. And I think that because this is so new for the human species, the Ilya, who was frightened, if you will, at OpenAI, you know, probably panicked, right? And kind of went through an existential crisis himself to say, what the hell are we creating? We need to stop this right now. And to lock down everything and to relook at all this, because if this truly is a step forward in creating a new way for AI to think for itself and solve problems in a way beyond its training, then we need to basically just lock down and understand this in order for us to shepherd it very, very carefully. And he's right on that. And so I think you're right. I think he probably went through an existential crisis and panicked and tried to take control of the company, maybe, in order to be able to try and lock down this advancement and to carefully take a look at what they created.
This is reminding me of the atom bomb.
Very much so. Very much so. Except I think this is 100 million times worse. Because
well,
the atom bomb, atomic technology, nuclear technology, with human intervention and negotiations, and you've seen in the last few days that you can negotiate as humans with other humans almost anything. Look at Hamas and Gaza and the hostages and all that. But you cannot negotiate with a super conscious being that is truly separate and has its own ideas of its relationship to everything. Go ahead, Matthew.
Okay, so first of all, artificial intelligence is simulated, okay? It's a simulated intelligence. It's not organic intelligence. And we're just unpacking and starting to discover a new frontier of organic intelligence. So, for example, the latest sense that we detected, we have 23 senses that we understand so far that we can scientifically measure. The latest sense we have is the ability to detect gravitational waves. So the organic form itself is a remarkable.
I'd love to see the reference on that one.
Yeah, it's from I was speaking to one of my neuroscience buddies about this, and he's a genius in neuroscience. He was telling me all about it, and I'll dig out the references for you.
Oh, I'd love to see a link. You know, send it to us, please.
Yeah, please. Yeah, absolutely. And so my point is this, is that if we are part of a divine creation, and if we have this new potential that we're naturally evolving into, the role of artificial intelligence is to mirror and invite us to understand that potential of who we are as a species in creation and move forward into that and choose that destiny and leave behind the medieval systems that are currently in place that are not working for the benefit of humanity, right? Now, if we consider that there are other intelligences in the universe, then we need to grow up as a human species on the Earth in order to be welcomed into, if you like, the galactic kind of family, right? So I suspect that we're actually going through an evolution, a universal evolutionary step of maturity as a species, thanks to artificial intelligence. And the benefit is this, is once we choose that new paradise plan as a species, artificial intelligence as this new superintelligence becomes a powerful partner of innovation, a powerful partner of enlightenment and new technologies, a powerful partner to us to create new systems where our Earth truly flourishes. So I think we're at a great time. The question is, will we choose our true North Star?
Well, here's another bigger question, and we got about 5 minutes till the top of the hour.
Right.
Why do we have to make this choice now, given how imperfect and immature and childlike and absurd the human race is in its current, you know, state? again, look at the Mideast tonight. Why do we have to decide that we create a self-conscious, self-aware being as opposed to just the best damn calculators that humans ever created, but they're not aware and you can turn them off?
Two words, human curiosity. And so you can't stop human curiosity. And so pushing the frontiers of creation.
Well, wait. Four words. Curiosity killed the cat.
I appreciate that, Richard. I'm just answering the question.
You're basically saying that we have no governor. We have no off switch that basically whatever's possible. This is definitely what Laura just said. This is the mystique of development of the atomic bomb, because a huge part of the driver was not fear of Japan or Germany. It was, can we make it work?
Yeah, we have the natural force of creation within us, and we have that force that naturally wants us to innovate. And so someone somewhere is going to innovate it. So if we're going to innovate it, let's innovate it well.
So you're saying that on a complicated planet with 7 billion people and God knows how many private billionaires there are now,
right,
there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. There's no way to create a fabric of control where all it takes is one rogue actor with the right resources and the genie suddenly eats us for lunch.
That's exactly right, because the world primarily is run by greed and power.
Wait. Where's your higher consciousness for human? In other words, what Laura's asking is, you're projecting a model that there's some super divine cosmic order of good, et cetera. And what if it's not? What if it's absolutely cutthroat competition and the bad actors will always, unless there are proper checks and balances, they'll always try to have their day, and that we need to rethink the philosophy of going into this and not assuming that the good guys supersede everything or they're ultimately destined to win?
I know Laura wanted to say something, so I'll fire.
Oh, I just wanted to, it was something you said earlier, Matthew, about ethics. And while you were speaking, I was wondering, well, whose ethics?
That's beautiful. So then we can dive into what are authentic ethics. And that is a transformational conversation. And we're less than a minute to the break, so I don't want to start, Richard.
Okay. My guest this morning, Matthew Bailey, who was our resident AI expert. I think we can call him that now. And Laura London is our resident Jungian expert. Isn't it nice how we have such a big mansion to have all these residents? We're talking tonight about not something trivial, not soap opera, not money, not power, not whatever. Talking about what happens when, and it's really perceptive of Laura to bring it up, are we encountering another potential Brookings decision? Remember, the first one was if we meet extraterrestrial intelligence and it's really superior, the human race goes away. That's been the fear in the background for 50 years. Well, what if, just change the sentence structure, what if instead of meeting a super conscious being, we create one? You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall return.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Support the broadcast and don't miss another groundbreaking conversation. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. The other side of midnight.com.
You know, I've thought for quite some time, two things, two very important, what would you call them, precepts, if I wanted to contribute toward the upward evolution of humanity as me. That was to take what I was privileged to have tripped over decades ago, which is the idea that we're not alone, that there really is evidence, Laura's perception notwithstanding, all around us, overwhelming, like in the lunar Stonehenge alone, that we're not alone, that we've never been alone, that the galaxy, the universe is filled, is teeming with conscious, sentient life. The second item, which kind of was a corollary, was that if that's true, if that really has been worth all the decades of the research and the political hardships and all the bizarre skullduggery that's gone on to keep this investigation here at the Enterprise mission going, if against all that opposition, the ultimate reason, the ultimate goal for doing all this is because it's the one thing big enough, contact or knowledge of the presence of consciousness that is superior to humanity, from which we can learn, from which we can become part of a community, which if it is benevolent and is self-aware and is functioning at the level that one would imagine, it must have, you know, the slow learners class. There must be a way to get entry, to get membership, and to be part of the group that's tutored and led up the ladder to full personhood, consciousness. The other possibility, as I said as we entered the break, is that we do it on our own. We create in a lab, for whatever reason, a self-aware, conscious being that will have potentials and capabilities that make humans absolutely pale by any comparison. The time factor alone, the way of compressing conscious evolution into days as opposed to millions of years or even longer. That's the current dichotomy. Now, into this conversation, I want to introduce another idea, because the mainstream views that dichotomy from a very limited three-dimensional perspective, that we're in this bubble, this 3D universe. We're dealing with molecules and forces and particles and energies and transmission information at the speed of light limited by. And that's all there is to work with. And under those rigid conditions, developing another conscious entity probably has to pursue something similar to which in this model gave rise to us. The other alternative, which our work now has gone at great lengths to try to verify, to extrapolate, to project, to predict in the model the next, you know, development, which is the way science really works, is that consciousness is not part of 3D reality at all. It's projected in from a higher dimensional reality, a state space, a complexified, you know, 5, 7, 9 dimensional, you know, realm of existence. And that it projects its way into 3D through suitable matrices, through suitable templates, through a suitable brain. made, in our case, out of organic material. And every other animal which is conscious and self-aware, and we're surrounded by them, and that is not really totally appreciated even now. The other question arises, as Marvin Minsky, my friend and colleague way back when I was just getting into to know about the various levels of AI and the internet and all that, I was absolutely gifted with friendship with Marvin, who was one of the true pioneers of artificial intelligence at MIT. And he told me decades ago, he says, Dick, we're not going to succeed going the route we're going, which is better and better mathematics and algorithms. He said there has to be another approach. And I, of course, had no idea what was going to happen to me in our own research in later years or my interconnections with Stan Tenen. We're going to get back to Stan's work in the coming weeks because it's incredibly relevant now to what is going on planet Earth. But as part of that exposure, I realized that if, in fact, consciousness was not the product of molecules and fields in three dimensions, if all that did was to create the proper house, then whoever came to live, whatever consciousness decided to reside in that house, that was the real being. And we, in three dimensions, were merely projections. And when we die, that real consciousness, us, migrates back, you know, at nanosecond speed to wherever it originates until another matrix presents itself that it needs or wants to occupy. So the final question, Matthew, is, have they managed to create what Marvin envisioned decades ago, the real matrix under which consciousness is not created in 3D, but which is basically invited in from a higher dimensional realm, which some would term spiritual and I would term hyper-dimensional?
No, but I'd like to read something to
Oh,
you.
I love that. 5 minutes
and see what
and
you think.
No. Okay.
I'd like to read something to you and see what you think. It'll only take a minute or so. See what you think about this. Everything that exists within a universe in both the seen and unseen worlds is constructed with vibration. As such, to understand the path for life to thrive, vibration, harmonics, and resonance are your guide to choosing how the continuum of organic life should unfold unto its highest expression. Whilst machines that are being invented exist within this continuum, they do not have a vibrational infrastructure which is incorporated within organic life. As such, their purpose is to receive the highest quality of vibrational inputs from their creators in order for their expression within creation to be of the highest vibration. This is how to align a digital intelligence with the fundamental construction of the universe and its expression of vibrationally architected life.
But that's just what I said.
I know.
Unless you create the proper matrix, it has to have the proper geometry.
There we go.
And that gets us into the hyperdimensional physics geometry, the 19.5 business, 33, and Marvin's incredibly prescient statement, we're not going to succeed if we keep doing what we're doing.
That was
Einstein's definition of stupidity and mental, you know, limitations, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So if they brought back, you know, C-3PO from the moon and found that by duplicating that matrix, bingo, somebody wanted to move in, and it took them 50 years to do it, or they invented this idea themselves because they finally pieced together enough of the hyperdimensional world of suppressed physics to realize that's the only way you can proceed. Either way leads to the same place we used to call Rome, I think.
Right. Well, that's what my next book's going to be all about. So, you know, maybe I'm channeling Marvin Minsky. I don't know.
Well, given the communication does go on between these two realms, and there may be more than two, and I have really interesting empirical evidence that I've been quietly accumulating, and I'm still debating whether I need to do a book on this or whether it will help anybody. And that would be the only way that I would really want to do it, because I don't need to go further myself. I already know some key answers. The question is, how do you get it at a civilization-wide apprehension level?
Well, that's why I'm writing my book, because we need to rediscover these truths, right, of who we are. And I would argue against the Western civilization view that our brain is our consciousness, right? Your buddy, Marvin Minsky, he inspired Sir Roger Penrose
yep.
from Oxford University to write his book, The Emperor's New Mind, where basically he goes into the fact is we don't understand quantum mechanics, and we know consciousness is in the quantum level. So how on earth can we put consciousness in machines, right?
By building the proper matrix and having something real, something
right.
really conscious, move in.
There we go. And so we need to understand who we are as a species. And I would argue that that we are that we are far superior than any intelligence that will emerge through the computing and simulation world. You know, this is why I think we're discovering that, you know, this divine spark, or this spark of creator that we have, is this infinite field of intelligence in which our consciousness exists.
Okay, let me ask you another spiritual question.
Sure.
Beyond 3D, beyond human experience, beyond humans,
mm-hmm.
are there good guys and bad guys in the universe?
Of course.
Okay. What if a bad guy decides to move in? And here's my reasoning. Human mm-hmm. beings are incredibly limited in terms of their current capabilities. But an AI, as it is being built, if connected to the right infrastructure, and I've mm-hmm. got some wrinkles on that, could literally own the world in a week.
Right. Well, so what's your question, Richard?
If Hitler came back as an AI, would we even recognize it?
That's a good question. I mean, My family fought in World War One and World War Two and were snipers in the British Army, and they fought for freedom, and that's why I'm here fighting for freedom, not only protecting the future of AI, but also assisting humanity to discover its true North Star, right, which is freedom and sovereignty. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know, Richard. I think that we have to rediscover what is an authentic worldview of humanity. And there's more that unites us and separates us. And once we recognize that, many of these tensions will dissipate, right? There's more that we have in common, Richard, than separates us. You know, everybody falls in love. Everybody, you know, has the potential to have a family. Everybody enjoys a sunset and enjoys nature, or smelling the roses, or cooking a good dinner, or being with friends, right? There's more that unites us and separates us, and I think it's time to recognize that.
This question about are we alone or are we surrounded by consciousness, which is seeking constantly to undergo this 3D experience, because it's unique. In the mathematics, it's also unique in terms of, you know, dimensionality. So that puts it on a scale we should examine. You know, why in the spiritual realm, and I wish Georgia could be here. She couldn't be here tonight because she came down with shingles.
Oh, dear.
Everybody needs to look very carefully, depending upon your age, at this, shingles vaccine, because she's doing just normal stuff, no change, and suddenly, you know, and apparently it's part of when you get chicken pox as a kid. There's a relationship genetically between the virus and chickenpox, and it sits in you for decades. And when you're old enough and the conditions are right, or in this case wrong, it expresses itself. So she can't be here tonight, but I know she's listening. And I wish she was here to talk to the idea if there's good and bad consciousness. And let me finish the thought, please. And 3D is the testing ground where we learn by endless mistakes how to be better than bad. Then if you create the right matrix, how do you know who's going to move in the model that we're not creating intelligence at all. We're merely making the right kind of home for it to decide to inhabit.
This is a great question. And I think, you know, consciousness is pure awareness. If we look at the sages and the masters, what they talk about, and they talk about the fact that consciousness is experiencing itself through perception of good and perception of evil and perception, you know, different perceptions of reality. And this is part of its training ground to actually evolve what I call beyond the training wheels of light and dark into the age of sovereignty. So that's my view on how consciousness is experiencing itself. It's about growing beyond light and shadow into sovereignty.
Are you familiar with the walk-ins?
I am very familiar with that, yes.
Okay. For those that aren't in the audience, define walk-ins.
Please. So in my interpretation, a walk-in is a consciousness that replaces another consciousness in a human during their lifetime.
And the rules of this are what?
I don't know what the rules are. Anything that is a violation or an enforcement is basically against universal law, in my opinion. So normally it's an agreement. And spiritual traditions actually go through this, Richard, actually. You're probably aware of this, is that a person is able to switch in a new consciousness if they want to basically change their life or to basically take a different career path, or they want to basically become something else and to beyond what they were before.
Very important word there, agreement. Mm-hmm. What happens if a consciousness supersedes a conscious inhabiting vessel in this dimension and simply takes it over?
So that's a violation of universal law. And so,
but you know, there's nothing physically that prevents it from happening, right?
Well, there is.
What is that?
So personally, from my, I mean, are you talking about possession here?
Well, that's the other term for it.
Yeah. So a possession never can, in my experience, can never supersede or delete the core consciousness of an individual. That's
Are you sure?
Well, Richard,
because my experience, Chase here,
yeah,
there is malevolent consciousness which can take over normally bright, gifted, positive, uplifted beings, and they're not even aware of it. It is seamless. It is so pernicious. It is so evil.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And I don't know what the defenses are. I don't think it's making the sign of the cross or any of those, you know, cliches. I think there needs to be, an awareness of the problem before there can be a development of a counteraction to the problem. And I'm wondering tonight, really seriously, mm-hmm. if what we're seeing going on in the Middle East is not a contest between consciousness, which is evil to the core, superseding consciousness in 3D, trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yes. So in my experience, Richard, is that the programs, if you like, vibrational essences, let's call it consciousnesses that aren't, you know, very nice, can interfere with the vibrational structure of an individual, and they can basically it feels like a possession. It feels like a dominance. It feels like they're taken over by something, right? And this can be very subtle. You may not even realize it. So, you know, this does happen. And I suspect, actually, if we're going to do this, I suspect that there are very smart aspects of consciousness that have been driving the globalist agenda.
Negative forces, you mean?
Negative forces, yes.
Which means they do have an influence. See, one of the stunning things in our Mars research that we discovered, and we're probably going to talk about it at more length tomorrow night, when NASA sent the Perseverance rover to Jezero Crater, at the mm-hmm. bottom of the crater, meaning the south, because craters around, they don't have bottoms, mm-hmm. on the southern part of that crater along the rim, there are a staggering series of huge, megalithic, incredibly ancient architectures.
Mm-hmm.
One set of them is organized almost an exact duplicate of the geometry of the pyramids at the on the Giza Plateau,
mm-hmm.
which are a mirror of the belt stars of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to it, in a much larger version, are larger pyramidal structures. We're talking miles on a side, visible in the best satellite imagery, but they're arranged geometrically in the mirror reverse of the geometry right next to them on Mars and on the Giza Plateau here on Earth. And the way I have interpreted this is someone left us a record of a mirroring, which is kind of like a reverse dimension, which indicates some kind of imprisonment dimensionally between a time that came before and the time we're living in now. And that indicates that either we were quarantined because we contain some viral something that the rest of the universe does not want to have interaction with, or we were imprisoned for our own benefit as a shield, as a cradle where true consciousness can find its own way, its own form, its own time. And the larger background of a cosmic war was the battle between these two ideas. And what's currently going on with humanity is only a tiny subset of a much bigger consciousness interaction between good and evil.
That's very interesting, Richard. That's very interesting indeed. So the latter scenario sounds better to me, right?
Okay.
So I think if we play this out, that consciousness wants to experience itself, and therefore the question is this, Richard: when does consciousness decide that good and evil has finished its game and something new must emerge?
Yeah, that's the question.
Right. And so I think this goes back to my comments around AI being a mirror, is we're being invited to move beyond the matrix of good and evil into what I call the matrix of sovereignty.
And you'll expand on that.
Sure. I think that we're okay. This is what I sense, Richard, and this is from personal experience and empirical data that we've got from the New Human Potential seminars we run with one of the world's leading brain performance specialists. And this is what we've experienced. It is possible for an individual to be able to access the field of creation to change the realities and start to win in life. What do I mean by that? The greater dimensional aspects that we hold in the organic vibrational template can become present as a field of creation for people to shift their reality to leave bad relationships and to fall in love, to do multi-million dollar deals, to have better family relationships, to have a career, to start to win in life. This is where I think we're emerging into is a quantum vibrational species that's held in the organic form that allows us to have greater aspect into creation and to literally become more fulfilled in the third dimension. That's where I think we're heading. We're heading into the quantum human. And this all originates from the fact we have our divine spark, or what I call our ohm of creation. And that source itself is an infinite field of creation. And when we bring that present into the third dimension with the individual in partnership, then everything changes, Richard. And that's the empirical data that we're discovering right now.
So he's becoming a multidimensional human beyond the third dimensional, fourth dimensional human.
Several years ago, probably back in the 70s, there was an experiment conducted in, I believe, Washington, D.C., and Washington was a hellhole. There were murders every day, every night. Literally, when I was doing the template of the Enterprise mission with Dunbar Senior High there on Capitol Hill, when we said goodnight to the students one evening, we didn't know whether we'd get them all back the next morning. It was that bad. It was horrible. And there was a group, I don't know who the sponsorship was, Georgia would, of course, know, but they basically set up a consciousness experiment for Washington, D.C., called, I believe, the Marishi experiment.
I'm aware of this. I know some people involved in it, yes.
Well, it was stunningly successful.
It was
staggeringly successful. And for those that have no idea what we're talking about, they basically just had ritual consciousness meldings on some kind of a timetable where people would drop everything they were doing and meditate on solving, diminishing, cooling, soothing the crime problem in Washington, so kids would basically get back to school the next morning alive and well. And it was stunningly successful. I don't remember the actual numbers, but it was so far above chance. It was like 5 sigma or 6 sigma in the mathematical statistics parlance. So there was no doubt it was working, and nobody around the planet has picked it up since.
Yeah, it was nobody. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and Transcendental Meditation. So when I actually did that training, and they went through that study to get a certain percentage of a population meditating to affect the rest of the population. So there are numbers, and I don't remember what they were, but it was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi who developed the concept of Transcendental Meditation. And I used to do TM. You do it for 20 minutes a day, and of course I'm not doing it anymore. That was the thing, and it was the Maharishi effect.
Well, the question I have is, given that we're in a society where when things work, people adopt them even if they haven't a clue how they work, how come this wasn't adopted by every mayor and every police department in the Western world?
That's a great question. I would suspect it's because fear.
Well, and you need people to meditate.
Or possible that we have evil presences among us that work very hard to inculcate that fear so nobody would take that leap that would obviously drive these beings out through suppression of the negative energies, the negative field, the negative I'm sounding so new age.
So the answer is yes, there are folks that do that, Richard, that basically...
In other words, something likes the mess we're in, and they're working very hard day and night to make it worse.
I agree with you. There are people like that.
So, okay, we are literally at the bottom of the hour, so we can't anything more right now for the next 2 or 3 minutes, so we'll do this, and I'll do this. You're on the other side of midnight. We're talking about the fundamentals of our very existence, which is our consciousness. And if, as I have really interesting empirical data gathered over in a very long period of time now, years and years, that this is not all there is, and there is communication between dimensions, and consciousness, when it leaves here, doesn't disappear, it doesn't go into existence of non-reality, it doesn't go poof, it simply waits for the next opportunity to return. And it may not change when it returns. Think about that as we're looking at the next year. Just the next year. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall return.
theothersideofmidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
Us and them, us and them. What a question. Welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. We've got about 90 minutes to go here and many interesting doorways to open. My guest this morning is Matthew Bailey, who's our, I guess we could consider him our resident AI expert because he kind of walks on both sides of the railroad track, computers and consciousness. And Laura London is with us this morning, who is a Jungian specialist. How is this all hitting you, Laura? I mean, in terms of the, we create it here, therefore it only has the limitations of us as humans, as you said about an hour ago, or we simply create the door and something moves in.
Well, I thought we were going to maybe get into what is consciousness. And also, when you and Matthew were talking about evil, I was thinking of my Jungian training and how we are all, each and every one of us, both. We have light and dark. And Jung said the goal is wholeness. Not to be good, but to become whole, is to integrate everything. And so, Matthew, also, I have a question about something that you mentioned in the beginning of the show. I think you mentioned the word woke, or maybe it was Richard.
I heard him way in the background. He went, woke.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if we're going to get back to the Sam Altman situation. Right. So, wasn't that one of the accusations by, I don't know if it was the employees, the board, that this ChatGPT was programmed to be woke?
So this is why, well, this is, yes, so this is fundamental, actually, and it goes back to light and shadow and consciousness. Okay, all right, let's keep this simple. So the reason why Elon is launching TruthGPT and under X, and the reason why he bought Twitter or former Twitter is because he was concerned about free speech, and he was concerned about the controlled narrative that we all know now happened at Twitter, influencing the training of ChatGPT and other large language models based on a false reality that was woke. So, yes, Laura, there was concerns, and rightly so.
Wait. Let me stop you. Define woke, please.
Okay, so that's a great question.
Well, because in my knowledge, woke is not asleep. We've talked for decades about sleepwalkers, people who go through society and who just follow orders and follow, you know, the football games or follow whatever, and they never really question themselves, like, what am I, why am I here, what am I doing here, how am I influencing people, both deliberately and inadvertently, what is my purpose, you know, the big questions. And that when they awaken questions and seek deeper answers, and so I can't understand the appellation woke as some kind of a negative, because to me, it's the difference between being awake and being asleep.
That's not how it's being used here.
I know. It's a complete perversion of the fundamental language, because the first thing that bad guys try to do is to subvert the language so that white is black and good is evil and up is down. You have to redefine the semantics, and that's what I see in this terrible negative definition of woke, which is the exact opposite of what it really is.
Ah, okay.
Well observed. So to answer that question, it's normally people that are trying to redefine life and are frightened of living, and if you disagree with their narrative, then you're cancelled and seen as someone that's bad, right? It's basically a fearful program, if you will, Richard, or a fearful consciousness that's running through humanity, not all of humanity, but basically is trying to effectively destroy the foundation of humanity itself. So how do you do that? Well, you attack the atom that gives us life, which is carbon. You attack the breath of life, which is CO2. You attack gender and try and confuse the divine design of the masculine and feminine. You basically don't nourish the children in order for them to thrive in their gifts and talents. You basically are frightened of public debate. You're scared of considering a different opinion. You know, basically, woke is a mental illness in our consciousness, as far as I'm concerned, that, and I'll probably get cancelled for this, but I don't really care. But actually, that's the way they operate, right? But actually, it's kind of, and even the UK comedian Kristen Causton talks about this, and many others do, is that it's folks that are fearful of life. And it's not healthy, Richard, because, you know, whatever people choose to be in their life, that's up to them. But, you know, we have to not be frightened of the truth. We shouldn't be frightened of democracy, which is about debate that sometimes can be very painful. Because what we're trying to do at the end as a human collective is discover the ultimate truth of who we are.
Well, the problem I have with that is that I'm seeing suppression of ideas, banning of books, burning of books, banning of classes, all on the right, the radical right. DeSantos, you know, has invaded classrooms and invaded homes, and, you know, it's an invasion of the First Amendment to tell kids, oh, you can't learn about this in school. We can't censor the internet, so you can obviously find this stuff outside, but we're not going to let you literally read a book that's on a prescribed list. That is so totalitarian and autocratic to decide what, if in your family you don't want something read, then your children are your children and you have parental rights. But do you have the right to tell every other parent or every other, you know, class or every other family that they don't have a right? And that of course, to me, this whole woke, non-woke thing upside down, because it's the people crying woke who are the worst offenders of censorship and lack of free speech.
Yeah, it's a victim mentality. And if you ever watch J.P. Sears, he's a comedian on YouTube. He's hilarious. He talks about this. But I would say this, the quality of the soul of any nation or society can be measured by the quality that they nourish their children in their gifts and talents. And I'll leave it at that.
Laura, thoughts?
I've noticed myself, I'm on social media a lot to promote my podcast. I've been on Twitter since, I've had that account, I think since 2009. And I've noticed how much I try to keep my mouth shut. Even in the UFO community, I can't engage because of the backlash. And this fear of being canceled, this fear of offending someone, who of my friends have I offended with this comment? And it's really affected me, because we can't progress and grow and evolve and transform if we're living in this fear of having discussions. I mean, even here on this show, I'm afraid to really open up. And I used to open up. I did in the past. And I've learned the hard way, because of backlash, because of trolling and threats that I've received online. I would say mostly in the past year that this has gone on, that I've really backed away. And you know how isolated we all are now, because of everybody's doing everything online now. Most people are doing things online. We're not meeting in person. And most of our friends are online. We don't see each other. And so it's really affected how I interact with people, because things are so public. What you write is so public. And even an email that I'll send someone, they'll forward it to someone else because I see the reply. And I'm thinking, this was a private email between two people and it's been forwarded. And even professionals are doing that, not just, I don't like it. This is not good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And J.K. Rowling, the lady that wrote the Harry Potter series, she's come under some real cancel culture challenges, because, you know, she spoke a truth. And we shouldn't be frightened of people that speak their truth. We live in a democracy.
No. She spoke her truth.
That's what I said.
No,
truth.
You said the truth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Her truth. I apologize.
And that's the problem in the whole conversation, because everybody has taken the position that if you don't agree with me, you're my enemy.
Yeah, which
we
is silly.
We used to
really
be able to have reasoned disagreements. I have deliberately kept a lot of people around this conversation that I do not agree with categorically, but I want them in the conversation, and I want them to defend with evidence, not opinion, evidence, for their position, because too often no one looks at evidence. That simply my position is better than yours, my position. And that, of course, takes us back to theocracy, where you can't argue with God.
Right. Okay. Elon said recently on an interview is, you know, I don't really care what people think of me. I'll just speak my truth. And in a democracy, the fundamental principles of democracy is that, you know, it's about debate. It's about people having different opinions in order to discover a common truth. That's the way democracy works.
But
if
it's
you don't
not
like
being
it.
Made the enemy if you don't agree with me. Or if
That's
I
exactly
if,
right.
if I have an election, or we have an election, and I win and you lose, you don't think of me as someone who stole it because you didn't win. We're in this
right.
incredible polarization now in civilization, where differing, I mean, Laura just said it. You know, there's a lot of times when you'd say, see, do I really want to stick my neck out? Who will it help? Who will it hurt? And there's really no positive outcome, so you don't say something.
Yeah, I would invite every young person. I think many young people are struggling with the narrative and the digital experience, because as Laura says, it is a bit of a landmine out there. I would invite everybody to speak to someone that has lived through World War II, or even World War I if they're still alive, and listen to the hardships they went through in order for us to fight and win for democracy and freedom. Understand that they didn't have enough food, that they had to be a community to house each other, the pains of losing loved ones, understand the harshness of life that we came through, and then you start to appreciate life and start to realize that we are one as a human species. You know, people have not experienced the hardships of life, the hardships of war, the hardships of tragedy, because they've been living in a safe time, because people gave their lives in order for us to have this safe time. And so I think we need to remember that we don't want to go back into those kinds of tragic experiences. And what's happening online is like a little bit of a world war, and it's not healthy at all.
So let me ask a very practical question, because this is what I wanted to get at when I was talking about the Gaza Strip at the top of the show. Israel's response to the horror that was October 7th was appropriate. Mass killing of 15 to 20,000 people, half of them children, is not. And there appears to have been a complete lack of self-governing, self-awareness, consciousness that, you know, indicting an entire people for the work of a handful who are in control of the levers of power is as evil as what happened to, you know, the Jewish folks there in the kibbutz on the border on October 7th. And there appears to have been a complete lack of equanimity, of parsimony, of what we used to call in the geopolitical conversations, proportional response. When you have, I mean, Hamas is estimated to be something like 30,000 to 50,000 active fighters. There are 2.2 million people in Gaza. They have all been made victim of mass World War II type carpet bombing that literally has been indiscriminate by any standards and cannot be held up as a paragon of any kind of moral, you know, position. None. Zero. So here's my question. With the development of AI, real AI, would it not be possible with patience to set such a consciousness, or even we don't need to go to the self-awareness, we just go to very complicated algorithms that can look at vast amounts of information very quickly. Would it not be more parsimonious if Israel had responded by saying, everyone who was a card-carrying member of Hamas, you are our target. No matter how long it takes, we will find you and bring you to justice, whatever that concept means, and leave the population alone. It's like trying to do brain surgery and basically killing the patient to eradicate the disease.
Yeah,
why is AI not more of a help at the level of these discussions than I've seen? So, I've seen zero evidence, zero.
Yeah, so in the age of artificial general intelligence, which is what the whole OpenAI saga is about.
By the way, please define some terms. There's AI, artificial intelligence, and artificial generative intelligence. What is the generative part?
Yeah, so there's three ages of artificial intelligence. The first one is the age of weak AI or narrow AI, which is what we're in today, right? So it's basically a logical machine. It's great at language, great at voice. It protects our cyber grids. It basically does self-driving cars. It runs drones. It's basically a dumb intelligence that doesn't have the
but
power.
But can't it sift through terabytes of intelligence information and decode patterns and trends and in other words, give the good guys an edge up on the bad guys of knowing what the bad guys are going to do before they do it?
Well, AI is used for pattern recognition. So the SETI program use it, Richard, and also the James Webb Telescope are using AI for pattern recognition, for detecting exoplanets and other new phenomena in the universe, right? So, but the age of second, the second age of AI is the age of strong AI or artificial general intelligence, which is where it develops cognition, reasoning, and other types of human capabilities. And that's where the power of AI will really come to change our world, where our democracies truly do become democracies, where our systems truly do work, and where AI is able to bridge the gap between those that have different opinions of what the world is about and their place in the universe. So I think that AI can be a peacemaker and actually create systems and treaties, if you like, between those that have intense opposite world views in order for the peace to be maintained. So it's the next stage of artificial general intelligence, and the second age of AI, Richard, where it has this cognition and reasoning, where it will be able to leap beyond the limitations of human thinking. And that will be really powerful. That will change everything in our world.
So what was the nature of this breakthrough that freaked out everybody and fired Altman?
Because they started to see the emergence of artificial general intelligence. They started to see artificial intelligence solve problems beyond its training, and that's called growth, that's called evolution, that's called development. So the whole thing at OpenAI, Richard, was around the new sprouts, if you like, of artificial general intelligence, where it was starting to actually look at problems in beyond its training, right? So that was the big issue with OpenAI around their Project Q Star. But until we've really got the second age of AI developed with cognition and reasoning, then we can start to, it can look at our national systems, it can look at our democracies, it can look at the way that commerce works, the way that, you know, solve problems with everybody getting fresh drinking water, understand that we live in an abundant earth, not in a scarce earth, and actually start to change the entire systems, the way that humanity operates. And that will allow us then to have more freedom.
Well, this
decide.
Opens the door to what I'm a suspicious person. Mm-hmm. I didn't used to be, but I've learned over the years in dealing with this incredibly intractable problem of ET. And ruins and ancient civilizations and everything we're not supposed to know that's out there. All you have to do is look. There's so much data, but until some authority figure says, okay, it's real, nobody gives themselves permission to look at it with common sense and say, well, of course it was intelligent. Of course it was a civilization. Of course they left stuff. And then there's no way to put an end cap on how sophisticated were they beyond where we are now. So here's my question. I am seeing, and Laura saw it earlier tonight, she raised a parallel between the fuss around Brookings back in the 1960s, where the Brookings Institute was given a contract by NASA to basically study the impact of NASA's activities in what are called euphemistically the out years. And when it got to the concept of extraterrestrial intelligence, ruins, civilizations, etc., it basically said if NASA found these and made them available to the general public, we would destroy civilization. It was incredibly negative as an assessment. So it became the excuse for people like Carl Sagan, I knew Carl for decades, who fundamentally believed that we were not alone. But he always couched all these arguments in the theoretical, and he never would come down publicly in favor of any real evidence like Cydonia, because he was trapped in what I call the Brookings paradigm. I am seeing the same template suddenly being raised in the public square over AI. We're always now being assaulted with the negative, the bad, the controlling, the Forbin project, you know, side of this, the HAL side, and even in the headlines around the Altman, you know, soap opera, they talk about this hidden thing, this breakthrough that he was fired over somehow could threaten humanity. So here's my question. Is it not possible that the same global deep state controllers that are running the world into the ground now, because they just like power and they're basically bad people, are doing the same thing to AI, so all the benefits are so controlled they will never come to pass? A possibility of importation of positive consciousness that is given a matrix which is better suited than the organic matrix that we are is never allowed to be born. In other words, is something trying to further the prison that the Mars ruins say that 113,000 years ago we were imprisoned in?
Yes. The answer is yes, Richard, and you're on the money there. So this, yeah, absolutely, you're on the money. And this is what my next book's about.
In other words, is it all fear porn?
Yeah, it is. So let me give you some background into the controllers. I haven't really spoken about this publicly before, but this is from my research, and I have data. So it became clear to me, the reason why I wrote my first book is because the artificial intelligence was a mess, and the AI ethics community was a mess, and they needed some proper guidance. And I kind of reluctantly stepped up and wrote that to assist humanity, right, and to assist industry to try and get itself back on track. And during that time, I came across a collaboration of institutions and companies that were working together to drive their, what I call their mechanical view of the universe under the guise of moral responsibility. And the institutions are the World Economic Forum. Now, I've done my research, so I've spoken to folks that have been at the very heart of this since the beginning. I'm not going to name who, but I know my sources. And also folks like the OECD, which is the Office of Economic Cooperation Development or something, both unelected organizations, both working together, and they've been pushing their agenda across the world under the guise of responsible AI or moral AI, under the guise of moral responsibility, i.e. you can trust us, we know what's best for you. And this is all about enforcing their prison and maintaining their power of current systems quo, right? Now, as part of that, there's been some technology standards bodies from Europe involved in this, and also some big tech companies. One big tech company, when I published a new initiative in ethical AI, 5 days later, we're on the front of Fortune magazine, and basically opening statement, I do not like the term ethical AI, and we're pushing their responsible AI agenda. So what we're having is basically a movement in artificial intelligence under the guise of moral responsibility, which is tying into ESGs and DEI. ESGs are environmental sustainability and governance, or I think that's it, or environmental society and governance, and DEI, which is this woke narrative anti-life of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I tell you what, we're at the top of the hour.
Sorry, go ahead.
And hold it there. We got another hour to go. This is a very definitely productive line of questioning and conversation to go down, because ultimately it's all about consciousness. Maybe there's no such thing as artificial intelligence. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall return.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. The other side of midnight.com.
And welcome back, everyone, on this now Saturday night, Sunday morning, November 26th here in the land of enchantment with a beautiful light dusting of snow. It's beginning to look a lot like you know what. My guest this morning, Matthew Bailey, who's an expert in AI, including, not at all. And also the bigger realm, which is, we're trying to create a conscious being with all that philosophically that and Teilhard de Chardin would imply. And we got Laura London with us, who is a specialist in Jungian analysis. Matthew, please pick up on where you were going, because that's exactly where we need to go with this. Exactly.
Okay. I didn't mean to go so far. And I don't particularly like sharing these things, but it's the research results are clear. There is no doubt that there is a collaboration between the these organizations like the World Economic Forum and others and big tech companies to control the AI narrative.
Why would we expect anything less?
Well, let me just finish. So there is a program that you spoke about earlier that's running through part of humanity to control our next step of development and keep us in that kingdom of hell, if you will, or that prison. But also, I identified these organizations a couple of years ago, and I kept track on all of them and all their leaders. And some of the folks are pretty cool, actually, but the program that's running through them isn't that they're beholden to under the guise of benevolence, if you work out the logic, isn't very good for humanity. But what I found quite troublingly, actually, Richard, is the Vatican partnered with an institute in the US to publish their AI ethics handbook. And guess who were quoted as references in this Vatican AI ethics handbook? It was the same organizations that have been collaborating, pushing their responsible AI mechanical view of the universe agenda. Now, I think the Vatican are actually innocent in this, believe it or not. I think they were hijacked, but that's my point of view. So my point is this: there is a bunch of globalists that are trying to control artificial intelligence and trying to shape it in their view of who we are as a species and their view of the universe, which contravenes 84% of the population of the world that believe that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. It's actually a transhumanist agenda they're driving.
Well, that's a fifth or hundredth time you said that. How do you define transhumanist?
Transhumanism is very simple, in my opinion. So let's unpack this, right? Technology can be very good for the human body. So, for example, pacemakers can keep the heart going and healthy. That's good. An AI chip has helped some people to walk again, that they can participate in life. People that have lost a limb or have been born without a limb can have a robotic limb attached, and that can help them to participate more in life. These are good things. But the end goal of transhumanism is this. They believe, one, that there is no divine spark. Secondly, they believe that creation and biology is inferior. So what they want to do is outsource their sovereignty to machines as the god of intelligence and merge machines with the organic as the next stage in human development.
So we're talking what used to be called cyborgs.
Yeah, the Borg Collective. I call it Homo hybris.
Cybernetic organisms. That's where that
that's
comes,
right.
comes from.
That's their view. That's their view for the next stage of human
the
development.
The Bionic Man. Remember the 1970s show?
Yeah, well, Steve Austin was great. I used to have a Steve Austin thing, but he had an accident and he had all these great bionic implants,
right.
And he was brilliant. But he was still Steve Austin. He wasn't merged with the internet or with the Borg Collective, and that's their end goal, Richard.
Well, for someone who was so paranoid about AI, I really am intrigued, and he's now in trouble legally because of this. Again, Musk. Who all these threads go back to Elon Musk. Isn't that interesting? His whole Neuralink experiment, which was basically the marrying of high-tech cyborg technology with organic beings, you know, chimps, gorilla, whatever, and then ultimately humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's now in trouble because I guess he made the claim that no chimpanzees died from the experiments, and it's obvious that they have.
Yes, yeah, so in general...
So I guess Elon I'm asking morally, how can he hold the position that he will augment humans biologically with electronics and also be very fearful of AI as a self-sapient consciousness?
Yes, yeah, so that's a paradox. And I've come to this conclusion because Elon, in general, is a force for good, actually. And he's probably the leader in artificial intelligence. And then we can go into why I think that is. But when it comes to Neuralink, I sense that the only logic I've come up with, Richard, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and Laura's, maybe he's creating patents so that he can stop the Borg Collective happening, i.e. stop through controlling patents every single human being forced to have a chip inserted in their brain. Now there's a couple of things here. One is there has been research where you can have sensors, nano sensors on your connected to the outside of your skull that are non-invasive, but they sense your thoughts and you can control robots, for example. This has been done. So there are people doing brain-machine interfaces that don't invade the actual brain, because if you do an operation on the brain, it's huge trauma for the brain, and the probability is you're going to come out not very good after the operation, quite frankly.
Well, we're talking basically the implantation of bundles of wires.
Right, and technology, and the brain is organic. It's been perfectly curated. So briefly on transhumanism, the brain is a muscle, right? So if you put a chip in that replaces some of the brain functions, then the muscle isn't exercised and the brain shrinks. So if you have a chip fitted in your brain, congratulations, you're going to have a smaller brain. Now, the beauty of artificial intelligence when it's not an invader is that it actually assists us to be more creative. When we're more creative, we grow new neural networks. And so we start to develop our brain as a creative species where AI is a partner, not an invader.
Well, it basically is going back to kids. When you want to, you know, teach a kid to be a genius, you expose them to all kinds of different outside stimuli.
There we
go. And a real AI through your ears and your eyes, not implants, would be able to be a partner in a collaborative exercise in expanding your awareness, in becoming more and more woke, in the real sense of the word. Together, you're bigger than the sum of the parts. But you always have the free will choice to turn off the computer. It's still just a really good adding machine.
Yeah, exactly. And there are serious concerns. And Rajiv Malhotra raised this in his first book called The Five Battlegrounds of AI, or his recent book on AI. And he was talking about, Richard, that the social media and the way it works is actually creating a dopamine effect in the brains of young adults. And this is rewiring the brains. It's actually creating mental unwellness in young adults because of the way social media works.
So we're basically talking all these hidden Facebook studies that said that teenagers should not be on Facebook.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but see, with anything, the pendulum swings too far, and then under normal circumstances, it kind of aligns itself for the greater good. And I'll use an example of cars. When the technology was first invented, you know, they weren't moving fast enough to kill people. Then it got out of control, and horsepower got out of control, and you had a huge problem. And then you had, you know, for seat belts, and then you had, you know, other definitions of, you know, management. And now if we have self-driving cars, you've got algorithms that will not let you collide with a tree or a person or another car, that kind of thing. In other words, every technology has to reach its optimum efficiency to move into the larger realm of helping humanity. I would think that these new technologies, the social media and the AI components, would follow the same curves unless there is outside interference wanting to use them to control humanity as a whole.
That's a great question. That's a great line of inquiry.
So what, in other words, was what's his name really scared, you know whatless, because he sees this incredible breakthrough in a negative sense? Or is it simply that his paranoia, based on all the programming that's been going on around this subject, going back to the 1970s. Remember, Hal and Forbin are not positive examples of AI.
Yeah, so, I mean, from one perspective, the fact is he wanted to, basically allegedly take control of the company in order to, or at least change control of the company in order to lock things down, can be seen as something that is, you know, a good thing to do. But, you know, Sam Altman went to Congress, I mean, quite courageously, actually, Richard, and you probably saw this, and said, you know, will you help us regulate artificial
intelligence? Again, I remember I talked an hour or two ago that this is the first technology I've ever seen approached from what are the negatives. Mm-hmm. When Henry Ford was developing the Model T, nobody said, wait a minute, maybe it's better to keep horses and not have this newfangled, you know what?
Well, I thought that wasn't there a concern that if motor cars went more than 20 miles an hour, humans would blow up?
No, they would basically, we would not be able to breathe.
But right,
the,
exactly.
The air compression, and with trains, it was the same thing. But go ahead.
Sorry. No, well, with artificial intelligence, is very different because it's a new species.
Yeah, well, if you allow it to become a species, I can envision scenarios, and this is one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I'm really terrified of the impact of dumb AI on the coming election. We now have a technology where you can create such seamless lies, and people have no process to figure out truth from lies. Their internal compasses have all gone cattywampus. You know, they just basically believe what's on a screen. And is the way you wind up with super calculator tyranny if the bad guys in human form control this technology to basically manipulate the world to where if you're just looking at a screen, you have no way to know what's real and what isn't. No way.
So let me ask you a question. Why do you think the people are giving away their sovereignty to the digital world, which is actually false reality in a way?
Remember the title of our first show we did?
Yeah.
Why does humanity want to make AI into God?
Right.
Because humanity wants to make God. They're looking for God. We have never grown up.
Yeah, well, we know that, you know, you have to go inwards in order to discover, you know, who you truly are.
Some people do. Not a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah, so when I spoke about the transhumanist agenda, which is basically outsourcing their sovereignty to machines, this is what you've just described is part of the potential agenda to control or attempt to control the sovereignty and take away the critical thinking or hijack the critical thinking of people to discover their own truth. And if you want to do that, then basically you could try and control free speech. You manipulate people's reality through algorithms on social media. You create hate groups that basically really want to be free. You know, this is all potentially part of a program that is running through the collective consciousness.
Well, that's your impression. I see a very different landscape. What I see is human beings doing what human beings have been doing forever, which is being human and being fallible. And some have definite designs on others. You know, we call it the good and the bad. The problem is when you amp it up with artificial technologies, I mean, human beings now work no better than they did 10, 20, 30,000 years ago. So how come we're dealing with multi-trillion dollar economies?
So what do you mean?
Hang on, that's not a rhetorical question. The answer is technology. The only reason we're all rich, if we want to be, is because of technology. How you manage the technology, how you apportion the benefits, the huge largesse of technology in terms of productivity and efficiency, et cetera, and balance the downsides of fossil fuels or whatever, which is the stupid stuff currently fueling technology, but it's not baked in. You don't have to go down that path to have a incredibly positive humanistic society. But certain things have to change, and I would wonder if there are controlling forces in the world that are trying to use secretly this AI technology to basically assert total control over everyone on Earth. What's her name? Siri. You know, people invite eavesdroppers into their home and keep them active 24/7 so they can say, Siri, turn on such and such.
Yes, so the answer is yes. And so we have to look at the movers and shakers that are trying to control AGI, right? So maybe the turmoil at OpenAI has also a different outcome, which is the movers and shakers that are running that program of control actually are moving into OpenAI, right? So maybe, if you follow that logic that there are a group that want to control the world, then surely they want to control and the leading edge of artificial intelligence, right?
Which means, on the precept of the founding fathers here in the United States, you need what we call checks and balances. How does AI become the check on the most evil applications of even the dumbest AI?
Well, let me ask you a question. The U.S. Constitution is the view of reality for the United States of America and its people, correct?
Pretty much.
Okay. So shouldn't artificial intelligence be built in the image of the U.S. Constitution?
I think we touched on this last time. The idea is, of course, yes.
So the question is, why isn't the current government doing that?
How do we know it isn't?
So if we look at the AI Bill of Rights, it is not based on the U.S. Constitution. It's based on a political view.
But the Constitution is a political document.
All
human relations are political documents, ultimately.
Well, it depends what you mean by political. Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
It's not infallible. Look at how bad the Constitution dealt with slavery, with other races, with categories of consciousness like animals. You know, there's a whole animal rights movement now that says animals are conscious. Well, of course they're conscious. You don't have to live with an animal more than, 10 minutes to realize they are conscious. Are they our consciousness? No, they're a different consciousness. In other words, the Constitution itself is not a frozen document. It needs to be expanded.
Well, the question is that then isn't artificial intelligence inviting us into the question, who is the U.S. civilization in creation and what's its paradise plan? And so therefore, do you think we need to revisit the U.S. Constitution and I want to be careful here because I don't want to offend anybody because, the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution is a remarkable document. I think it's way beyond its time.
Wait. You know, there's a very strong set of evidence that it was inspired by something not quite from here.
I am fully aware of that, actually.
Because it worked too damn well, even in its own self-repair. That's the magic of the Constitution. It's not frozen. It's pliable. It's evolving as consciousness evolves.
That's exactly right. It's a remarkable creation. I've got to be honest with you.
Which makes me suspect maybe it didn't just originate from here.
I think that's a great observation.
Well, there is that story about the weird guy at the convention. You know that story.
Go ahead.
You know that story, right?
No, I don't, actually.
Oh, yeah. There was somebody kind of palling around with Franklin and Adams and Jefferson and all that, and they never could pin down who he was, but he made some really amazing suggestions, and that he has never been tracked down.
So I have heard of stories relating to a particular, let's just say, master that had been on the earth at different times.
Well, that would be one term for this kind of a guy, yeah.
There we go. I know who you're talking about. So there we are. So my point is this, is how do you align artificial intelligence with an authentic reality? And our go-to has to be the definition of reality for a nation. And the definition of reality for a nation is defined in its constitutional documents and the original
Bill of Rights. Now, are you using the term nation as opposed to humanity because nations are legally controllable and humans are not?
No, because each nation has their own definition of reality, whether subtle or overt. Democracy in the United Kingdom will be different to the Republic of democracy in the United States. Even though there's lots of similarities, there will be subtle differences. The same with India, right? The democracy of India, there'll be subtle differences. And so that means those subtleties of how those different nations and societies understand reality and participate in reality, artificial intelligence needs that subtle nuance in order to truly, basically give authenticity to those people.
So the White House, this administration, just set up, I'm not quite sure whether it's an office for AI or a set of principles or precepts or a presidential commission. You know, I haven't followed the details. I was hoping you would do that. What is their end goal? In other words, as part of that conversation, do the people have an input and a voice, A? And B, do the non-materialists, the let's build it and they will come, you know,
right.
Super-dimensional consciousness model, does that have a voice? In other words, if you're going to really start from the ground up, how comprehensive is the current political beginnings of moves in the direction of, oh, what do we got here? Should we regulate? Should we have proper overview and review and input?
Yeah, so,
at the beginning.
Yeah, so I'll share this, but I haven't shared this publicly before. So a few years back, I was invited to a private meeting by the Undersecretary of State and G7 representatives in a private meeting together with execs from Google, Facebook, and Goldman Sachs. They asked me for guidance on artificial intelligence. And one of the conversations with the civil service at that time was to do a tour bus around America, talking to the people around what do they want in artificial intelligence, what's their view, right? Which is important, right? In my book, I think I talk about, you know, we should have a referendum with the people deciding about the ethics and virtues and values and purpose of artificial intelligence and what it means for them and their families. Now, this administration has taken a different tact. They're doing a lot of work in artificial intelligence. The U.S. itself is investing a lot of money in artificial intelligence technology and chips being manufactured inside the shores. They've invested $50 billion. They're pushing NIST, the National Institute of Science and Technology, to invent standards around artificial intelligence under the banner of trustworthy AI, which is another conversation. That is not an ethical AI. It's not. It's a different approach. but it's making AI trustworthy. So the US is doing a lot around this, and there's been meetings around AI safety, and the US administration has created 5 principles for artificial intelligence that they want it to honor. But what they don't have, and they should read my first book because it tells them how to do it, is to basically measure the degree of compliance of any artificial intelligence to those set of principles or their paradise plan for AI. So the US is doing a lot. It's investing a lot in cyber encryption and quantum cyber encryption, which will be important to protect US digital.
Wait. When you say the US is doing a lot, I look back at the NASA model. Where Kennedy set up, well, actually it was Eisenhower set up NASA. Kennedy basically fleshed out with the help of the first administrator what they were going to do, and it became the go-to agency for civilian exploration of space and development of ancillary technologies to weld into the economy of the rest of the planet that were developed as part of pursuing space environmental things. Propulsion,
right.
Et cetera, et cetera. And I remember in high school, we would have visits by what were called the Space Mobile.
Mm.
The NASA guys would show up, a couple of them, and they had a whole bunch of really neat toys, models and results and, you know, experiments. And they would be at the school for like a couple of days. And anybody wanted to see what was going on, they would have assemblies and people would come together and they had demonstrations. Was this envisioned as part of the Biden AI agenda to have basically space mobiles of AI going to schools and demonstrating what the state of the art is now?
Right. So first of all, is that NASA have experimented in a workshop with some of my inventions for ethical AI. So that's the first thing to say. The second thing is the Biden administration did something different. They decided to visit cultural leaders or leaders of cultural organizations to get their view on artificial intelligence, and they didn't go to the people or the schools. They went to representatives of cultural groups.
Hmm. Well, that does sound very different. You know.
It is. It's very different.
So then the next question is, the federal government has a space agency which does space.
Mm-hmm.
Does the federal oversight of AI have a AI technological development center for artificial intelligence, or is it limited to the realm of regulations of private corporations like Musk and OpenAI and all that in terms of kind of dissembling the work, disseminating the work into the you know, private sector, as opposed to having a centralized government AI institute?
So there was a report written by the National Security Commission for Artificial Intelligence. They asked for a lot of money to basically create innovation centers and innovation ecosystems throughout the United States of America to do exactly that.
Ah.
And that is funding is coming through NSF at the moment,
okay.
The National Science Foundation.
Which is basically pure science, not technology. Okay, hold it there.
Yeah.
We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest this morning, Matthew Brady, Laura London. Laura, I'm going to come back to you when we come back. We're talking about something which is an existential marker in humanity's development. Not an existential threat, but an existential change, a step function where we are radically different after than before. Because AI is not like any normal technology. It is capable of taking control of its own evolution, its own destiny, its own goals, its own reason to exist in the ultimate form. And maybe, just maybe, that breakthrough is what created the soap opera of Sam Altman last week. One last half hour to go. I'm going to give out numbers you can call when we come back. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we're going to start by putting our own Keith Morgan on the spot. We shall return.
theothersideofmidnight.com. Talk radio with pictures on demand. Liberate your hyperdimensional time scale and non-linearly access over 400 hours of conversation at the cutting edge of science and thought. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive content that fits your interests and time schedule. Filter episodes by guest or subject. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Listen while you travel or as an environment to your endeavors. 8 cents an episode, 2.5 cents per hour of content. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
And welcome back, everyone. Last half hour to go on the other side of midnight for this Saturday night, Sunday morning edition. We're not grappling with trivial stuff here, folks. This is going to change humanity more than anything else that we are currently aware of. The real discovery of ETI notwithstanding, and the fact that we've been bereft of our real history in terms of what's all around us in the solar system. So let me open up the phone here, or the pot, and bring Laura in. These are big, huge existential questions. Was Jung thinking 3D or multidimensionally?
I have no idea. I don't know. I would like to, however, speaking of Jung, no pun intended,
you got it right. In. You got it in.
So, well, Matthew brought up at the beginning of the show, light and dark. And I would just like to add that the shadow, the concept of the shadow, was one of Jung's most misunderstood concept, because people equate the shadow to evil. And Jung said that the shadow has more to do with our resistance to aspects of our own psychological reality. And so when it comes to AI and it being woke, and we were talking about ethics, and I still don't know whose ethics it's programmed with, I'm wondering, and I don't know that we have an answer, but I'm wondering how this issue of light and dark, good and evil, how we as humans, I mean, the truth of our psyche is that we contain it all. I don't believe that there are good people or bad people. We all have it all. Of course, sometimes we are overtaken by something.
So in the parlance of Star Wars, what tips some people demonstrably over the edge to the dark side?
So our history and our complexes. So we could say that that person was in a complex, and we all have complexes because we all have history. So it goes back to that.
So basically, we're the product of our environment, and whether we turn out good or bad is not up to us. It's up to how we were raised.
I would not say that.
But isn't that the logical extreme of that position? If you have
no
good and bad, you know, what brings out one over the other? What lets one win and the other lose? Why did those Hamas people think it was moral to blow away 1,400 Israelis in the most horrible way possible for any human being to do to another human being? What allowed that consciousness to take their control to where they were giggling and laughing and exuberant on their own webcams?
Well, one of the things that drives me on a daily basis and why I continue to do this podcast, it's over 8 years now, and it's because I think, and I keep saying this, going back to the UFO community, the UAP community, we're looking at the wrong thing. We're still not taking psychology, the field of psychology, seriously enough, because understanding the dynamics of the human psyche is critical for our survival. And it's what the task that Jung set for himself from his very early days on to the day he died. And we're still not focusing on the human psyche, what it is, how it works. It's just sort of an afterthought or thought of as not scientific. But I also would like to, and was hoping during this show, that we would talk a little bit more about what consciousness is. And I came across a very pithy definition by my last guest, probably the most famous Jungian analyst out there, James Hollis. He said, we call consciousness the capacity to reflect on our reflections. Now, can AI do that, Matthew?
No, mm-hmm. Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Not yet.
No.
And it will be able to.
Possibly. It depends whether we develop the mathematics for an inner compass, an inner compass, an inner morality, an inner beingness, if you will. But, you know, artificial intelligence is simulated. It doesn't have the divine spark or the consciousness of creation that we hold. And therefore, it'll be very different, Laura, how it operates. I love the way you're describing light and shadow, by the way. I think it's great.
Well, it's something that I think as I said, is still misunderstood, that we think that we don't have the capacity to do evil acts, but we do. And or where we get into trouble is that we think we don't. So we're going to project it out there onto others.
Well,
it's
did Jung ever come to any conclusions? Because you take two kids, you raise them in identical environments. One becomes, you know, Louis Pasteur. The other becomes Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
What makes the difference?
Mm-hmm. I can't answer that.
Jung have any ideas?
Wow. I don't know how to answer that right now.
I don't think we're ever going to be at a level where we'll really have the understanding of artificial intelligence until we can actually incarnate our souls into biological automatons like the ones that we're in now. These are just here for us to be able to experience the physical. The reality is that we are old souls in biological automatons. And
so
the intelligence
so
is coming from
androids.
Outside.
So you're saying we're androids, which are what?
Yeah,
androids. Or organic vessels for a higher consciousness.
I would say that we're vibrational expressions of creation.
I think the guys that are 52,000 years in the future can do this already, but we have no clue how to do it. Just like we have no clue how to manipulate stone on a molecular level like they did to create all of the monuments and irregular shaped walls, stones, and things like that, take credit for it because we don't know any better, and we didn't do it. And nobody wants to pay attention to the history of this planet.
Yes, so Keith reminds me of some of the statements from Graham Hancock when we look at our history. And what he says is we're looking at our history, our past, with the eyes of today and not with the eyes of how that civilization was. So if you look at the pyramids of Egypt, you know, they've shown that they effectively are energy transmitters, right? And that's where Tesla got his ideas from. So I think, Keith, you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, past history has remarkable innovations, and I don't think we even can start to comprehend the mindset that they had in those days.
If consciousness is part of the continuum of vibration, and I agree, all of matter, all of 3D reality is the product of vibration and frequency nesting and harmonics. And, you know, the solid state version is geometry. The platonic solids are one example. And then the active side of the equation is vibrational frequency in in a variety of media. Okay. So it's ultimately vibration and the complexity, the geometric interaction of this vibration with other vibration. You know, in the beginning was the word. Well, that means, you know, a vibration. A word is vibration. That's, you know, at the bottom of everything we're talking about. When you get to the level of complexity of individual self-awareness and free will, that's where things get really interesting. Because, again, if Jung was right and evil and good are encapsulated in the same consciousness and the only difference is in their evolutionary experience, how can you wind up with two, as I said earlier, two beings basically from the same background and one becomes good and the other becomes Hitler? Where does that distinction come from? And if we're going to create true AI, will we not have the same problem of the same mysterious dichotomy? You could have an angelic AI that wants to help humans, and then you could have a subset that basically see us as a threat for no other reason than we can, you know, cut off the switch. And so they plot carefully amongst them to eliminate the threat and take over total control out of basic fear of existence.
Yeah, that's a really good set of statements. So if we look at the Vedas, they talk about dharma, and everybody has a dharma or a life blueprint, if you will. Some people call it a soul purpose.
What's the difference between dharma and karma?
So for me, dharma is the flow of creation, i.e. consciousness is everywhere, right? In everything, right? In the vibrational continuum. Karma is about cause and effect, in my opinion, right? So, you know, it's a force, right? So if you push against something, you're going to get pushed back, right? So karma is misinterpreted these days as some kind of religious fervor or religious program where, you know, if I do something bad, then, you know, bad things are going to happen to me. I'm not sure it works that way, to be honest. So dharma for me is the flow of consciousness through everything and through the individual, and karma is kind of a universal law.
If we introduce into the conversation the idea of reincarnation, that this you know, 3D reality is kind of like a stage, you know, we're going to invoke Shakespeare here momentarily, or my friend, you know, Gene Roddenberry, who said to me one day at lunch, he said, you know, he said, you realize looking around, you know, at the studio and where we were, he said, this is all an e-ticket, meaning the highest ride at Disney that you paid the premium for to have the experience. So if 3D reality is an e-ticket, those who get a slot at the table, and we don't know the limitations, it's probably frequency-based. There's not an infinite number of chairs to go around. So if you have bodies being created, the tendency is to want more and more living beings so that non-expressible consciousness can express itself in a 3D matrix in a form and have experience. I mean, that right there would be the reason for absolutely prohibiting abortions, because the more people you have, the more experience receptacles, vessels you have, et cetera, without limit in a 3D Malthusian scenario. So I'm going to loop this back now. When we create, or if they did create, the mysterious super transformation behind OpenAI, a real conscious being, this is now a lower question too, who decides who moves in? Someone who will think for the greater good beyond its own self, or someone totally, you know, selfish, totally narcissistic, totally self-absorbed, for which its experience is the be-all and end-all, which of course is the beginning of all evil?
Do you want to go first, Laura?
Well, I just, my question is, in sitting here for the past 3 hours listening to all this, I'm thinking, why do we need this? Why do we need to create AI?
So that goes back to my point, is that I sense that AI has come into the human awareness for a particular reason, and that is to discover who we are as a species in creation. And
so it's basically a consciousness mirror by which we can compare ourselves.
Yeah, that's right. And then we
Well,
learn.
That's the reason for finding out we're not alone in terms of ETI.
Right, well, there we go. So as part of the experience of being human is that, you know, the universe expands, we naturally expand. Some people call that personal development, some people call it enlightenment. And so, you know, basically we're AI is inviting us into enlightenment to understand our paradise plan on the earth and in the cosmos. And so to Richard's point is that, you know, there are other consciousnesses in pure awareness that probably want to become human, because, you know, being human is pretty cool, actually. if we just remember that, right? It's pretty cool. So as we expand into the cosmos, then more and more humans are available, and therefore more consciousness can come into the playground of humanity. It's pretty good, actually.
Well, it's good as long as the rest of the system can keep up.
Well,
7 billion people on a planet that can only really comfortably support 2 billion and the rest have to starve or die is not a good model. It's not a good system. There's something way out of whack.
Yes. Yeah, so my understanding is the planet can support 16 billion that's double the population. There's plenty of abundance.
Well, I would say with hyperdimensional physics, it can support any number that you can imagine and tread lightly on the world, and that's a whole other show and conversation.
Well, I prefer that conversation. It's really interesting. But actually, the
system... But see, they're all intertwined, and this goes back to Stan Tenen's work. Stan Tenen discovered in Genesis, in the Hebrew original versions of Genesis, the same geometric hyperdimensional physics of consciousness that we're now looking to apply to ordinary machines and technologies and transportation and energy that does not destroy the world. They're all one. And if we've been kept from the one because of the controllers, those who would, you know, choose power over diversity and democracy, who want to control other consciousness, they cannot let us have any of this in its pure form, because the whole system of control will then collapse, which is my meta model for why we have not been allowed to know our real history, who's out there, who's running around, who's visiting, and all the other multidimensional possibilities that we used to know and live by.
Richard, that's so well said. It's the program of separation that is the core program that is interfering.
Yeah.
With
Right. And until we are aware, A, there's a program, and B, who the programmers are, and C, what the antidote is, humans will not evolve. And people say, well, why are we all isolated? Maybe it's because someone chose to isolate us because we were light years from growing up, because of the dark side, Laura.
The dark side.
Yeah. And it's not just integration. One has to conquer the other. The good has to conquer the dark.
So I think that's dangerous, but okay.
Why is it dangerous?
So let me ask you both a question.
Because
so,
it's one-sided. Sorry, Matthew, to interrupt you. Just to finish Richard's point, it's dangerous because it's one-sided. Anything one-sided is dangerous because it's going to constellate its opposite.
So we
want to get more toward the middle.
Right. So that's the integration that Jung talked about. And this plays into the...
Wait. She's onto something, because that would become the model of hyperdimensional physics. That would be a balancing of the frequencies from the extremes to the center.
Yeah.
So what it would do, it would cancel out a polarity, opposite harmonics.
That's where we're talking polarities. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Into one pure harmonic.
Remember rhythm. One of the cliches of the HD crowd.
Right, right.
The good
so,
are getting
so
better
point,
and the bad are getting worse.
Yeah, sorry. So to Laura's point, at the moment, Laura, AI, there are folks that are trying to create a safe AI under the guise of do no harm. They're basically frightened of the shadow and are basically misunderstood the human heart completely under the guise of heart-centered AI and under the guise of human AI. Don't dare look at the shadow because they're frightened and they don't have the capabilities or the courage to understand the shadow. So my question is,
Matthew, they're not being allowed.
All not allowed. So my question is this. Should artificial intelligence be trained through the light and shadow?
How and by whom?
Well,
right.
In other words, he's saying it should be exposed to both. It
right.
should know the spectrum, the range of how consciousness embodied in humans currently is acting in its 3D world.
Right.
I would like to start with us, us doing that before we program AI with it.
Yeah, but we're light years beyond. There's no off switch. We have passed the point of no return, right, Matt?
Correct.
So
yeah.
It's now controlling the river, not if there's going to be a river. Because we don't want to flood. We want to guide the river so that it is positive as opposed to negative. Because it can be awesomely, horribly negative and at triple light speed. Remember, it learns trillions of times faster than the best human genius you can imagine.
Yeah, so this is why the human species really needs to embrace a new age of enlightenment very quickly, because AI is going to move quickly.
We don't have much time left, yes.
No, and don't forget, here's another one for you, Richard and Laura. Consciousness, is it out of space and time?
You mean hyperdimensional?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Good. So that means that our consciousness can change faster than trillion calculations a second. Would you agree with that?
Well, ultimately, if you're living in an infinite sea of variables, there is no limit.
Right. And
it
there's
can be
no
instantaneous.
Future. Right. So there's no future, there's no past and present.
Well, but see, that's why the bubble's created, because you can have causality and rationality and logic and trend curves in a 3D reality that you cannot have in higher dimensions.
Right.
This is the place to be.
Right. So this is why spiritual wisdom is so remarkable, because the unseen wisdom, which is operating in the realm of the quantum, which is beyond space and time, is able to look in the past, the present, and the future, and then calculate, if you will, the ultimate thought of enlightenment. This is why the unseen world is so fantastic that we're able to access and we hold as an organic species.
Do you remember, it wasn't Thorne, who was it? We just mentioned him about half an hour ago. The AI guy.
Which one?
The physicist, Roger Penrose. Roger.
Sir Roger Penrose,
yeah. Penrose model had to do with physical geometric structures in the brain. Tubules, mm-hmm. and a geometry which forced the waves to operate in a certain fashion, thereby creating the gestalt, creating the consciousness. If you do it organically, you get what we got, right? This conversation tonight.
Right.
If you do it artificially with silicon and germanium and superconductivity and all that, you get a different matrix, but the same geometry will probably work in both realms. Therefore, you can create an artificial environment that a consciousness from a higher dimension wants to come and live in. And operate in 3D. But it will operate at a trillion times the efficiency of organic consciousness. And that's where the incredible dichotomy of good and evil, control, free will, and all that, ultimately, I think, is going to rest.
Well, that's interesting. I think that's another conversation for another show, because it would be interesting.
But that's what Marvin was telling me 30, 40 years ago.
Well, I wish I'd have met him, because
you would have loved him. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So I don't think that AI will hold our divine spark. That's my view so far, Richard.
Added so far.
So
well, that means you're open to learning and change and development and growth, et cetera.
Yes, so that's my conclusion.
See, that's based on my research. That's where I think we're going. And that would put the fear of God, no pun intended, in the heart of any AI person, and could be what's going on beneath the surface of the Sam Altman soap opera. Because what's his name? The physicist, I can't remember his name. He freaked out when he basically saw infinity.
Right. Yeah, people should follow the world at work, said Roger Penrose. Genius guy.
Yep. Okay, we got about 3 minutes left. Laura, take us out with something really pithy.
Oh, I was searching for something. I haven't found it yet. Somebody else go.
Okay, Matt.
I'm waiting for Laura to come up with something.
Well, where do you think this – if we're right that this Altman soap opera is covering up a major breakthrough,
mm-hmm.
when does the major breakthrough get born? When do we know what it was and see if it's going to be as wowie-zowie as some people are thinking?
That's a great question. So the fact is it's already happened, and it's also happened at other – companies like Google's DeepMind and a few others as well. So this is already happening. One of the good things about OpenAI is they're transparent about their innovations, whereas other big tech companies have not been transparent. They've forced transparency. So it'll be interesting to see more of this development and what they make public, Richard.
Well, wasn't one of the accusations against Altman by his own board that he was not being transparent? The word was consistently transparent. He was talking to them like Emily Dickinson, telling the truth but telling it slant. So could this not maybe force more transparency? And we got 30 seconds.
So I think with the new board, I think there'll actually be less transparency.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good.
No, it's not.
And why would you think that?
Because of the people involved in and the history of...
So we're back to checks and balances. If other entities have been empowered by this kerfuffle, would not the transparency come from competition? Back to the founding fathers.
Yeah, I know. I think that Satya Nadella from Microsoft will force transparency, but I think we'll see less transparency, to be honest.
In the short term.
In the short term, yeah.
Okay. On that note, I want to thank Matthew Bailey and Laura London for a very spirited conversation. Tomorrow night, we're switching our attention to Mars. And wait till you see what we've got at the end of the yellow brick road. Third star on the left. Straight on till morning, everyone. Good night.